You're listening to Asians Represent, a series on the One Shot Podcast Network. I'm your host, Daniel Kwan, and this episode is brought to you by our amazing supporters on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/AZNSrepresent for exclusive content, show notes, and more.
I don't know how to shoot the breeze the way that Daniel does, so let's get into it. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Asians Represent. This is it's the second episode in our Fantasy Asia series. And this time we're focusing on Korea, which is super exciting. I'm Agatha. I don't know if y'all still remember me. I'm here. I'm one of the co-hosts. And this is an episode that we're doing. It's a nice and intimate episode between me and our special guest, Michelle, who we'll get into more intro later. But this is super exciting because I think this is a very interesting series, and we are definitely going to mine a lot of gold out of it today. So let's get into it. Like, Michelle, who are you and why are you so awesome?
I don't think I could answer that question.
I can answer the second part for you. Don't worry.
Hi, I'm Michelle. It is raining here. It's storming real bad outside. So if you hear rumbling, that is a storm happening. Sorry, podcasters. Sorry for all the weird audio. I am an RPG designer, I guess. I have published some things. I'm also a freelance writer. I have a Pathfinder Society scenario coming out in September called Necessary Introductions. I am also a writer on Howl of the Wild, which was announced for next year, and for the Pathfinder Adventure Path Season of Ghosts, which is a very spooky time set in Shenmen, which is like a super haunted part of Tianjia, and it's going to be great. I hope some of the things I wrote kill your players, maybe?
Yeah! Did you say kill? Kill your players? What?
I mean, that's what I wrote them for. That was my job.
to kill the characters, right?
Oh, sure.
Wow. Wowee. But in addition to that, there's also... Isn't there also a game that you're working on outside of Pathfinder?
Yes.
That is very relevant to our topic today.
Yes, the main reason why I got asked to be on here today is because I'm working on a setting supplement for the game Good Society, a Jane Austen RPG, called Chosun Society, that is for playing games of Good Society that are set in the Chosun Dynasty of Korea, which is a huge, expansive era and just has a lot of information and facts about culture and, you know, recommendations on, like, how to play in certain, like, parts of that history, what life was like, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not an expert. I'm not an academic. I'm just a dweeb. So please, like, don't be like, oh, like, don't be, like, citing me or anything. Like, no, I got everything from books and things that I read, like, obsessively. I'm not an academic of any kind.
I love that you're like, don't cite me. And then the thunder in the background's like, oh. That's so intense.
It's backing me up. It understands I'm not an academic.
Oh my gosh. But I read it and it's very, very good. Very detailed, but not like overly so. Everything can be relevant for playing a game about like social dynamics and trying to find your way in a restrictive society. Or a society with like restrictive or like strict hierarchies and like very specific social expectations. But let's kind of circle back to like your Pathfinder writing experience. So, I mean, like, what has been your experience writing for tabletop role playing games? Like, how did you even start?
Okay, so I haven't actually been playing tabletop RPGs it's like long, but it's not long compared to a lot of people, right? Like, I've been playing for about 6 years at this point. And gosh, I think I'm just really like, I really like mechanics. I'm really like into those weeds. Like, I mean, you know, because we played together, I'm a big min-maxer. I really want the mechanics to come into my play. So I'm always like thinking about that stuff. And then, like through that, I just started writing my own like weird little games on and like publishing them, like very tiny weird little things. But after that, I was just always interested. I always liked writing. It was my best SAT score. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's like the one thing I'm good at in life. And then James Case, who is one of the senior developers, Paizo, he actually posted a link to a Twitter post that he had made. He posted it in the Asians Represent server, and it was like, hey, any like Asian writers out there, if you want to write for Pathfinder, like hit me up. And so I did, and that led me here. And it's been a really good journey. It's been really great so far.
Yeah, I muted myself. Yeah, you worked on like a lot of things. So we applaud a hustler. And like, what kind of stuff did you write?
So out of the things that have been announced and I'm allowed to talk about a tiny bit, so the Pathfinder Society scenario, that's like a whole adventure. So, you know, that takes the players from A to B, and there's combat, there's like little things you gotta get done. And then for Season of Ghosts and Howl of the Wild, for both of those, I mostly did creature design. So yeah, Howl of the Wild, one of my creatures did get previewed at PaizoCon. No, was it PaizoCon? I don't remember. It got previewed on something. Maybe it was PaizoCon. My brain. But it's, if you look it up, it's called the Mammoth Land Star. It's a giant starfish that lives on land and eats people.
It's so scary. I was like, yeah. I'm horrified. This is amazing.
Yeah, I had a great time writing it, and I hope it gives you all nightmares about starfish, because starfish, if they were bigger, we'd all be dead.
It's true. Starfish are terrifying.
They're horrifying.
Sea creatures are just so scary in general.
Because they basically like shoot out their stomach and they start like digesting through like shells so they can like get to the soft stuff inside. And I read that, I was like, I must use this somehow.
Jeez. Yeah, nature is scary. A big theme on a lot of Asians Rep episodes, actually. Now that I thought about it. So, like, what's your approach to writing for these different projects? Because, like, there are guidelines and asks, right, that they have. And then, so then how do you put things that you want to include? I guess, like, the stomach of that, the digestive liquids of starfish and stuff like that. But like, how do you go about it?
I am the kind of person, I do really well with structure. Like, I flourished in school because everything was a routine. Like, I'm the kind of person who, like, if I'm on the streets, I'm done. But if, like, you know, I did something bad and I'm in prison, I would be a model prisoner. I would just be like following the routine so well. School is like prison, you know, it's the same thing. I did great in school. What? I probably do great in prison.
So but yeah, high int, low whiz. Is that what this means?
I just do really well when there are guidelines for me, when there is a set structure, and like, so like the more structure there is, the happier I am. I'm just like, yes, tell me what to do. But then there's always kind of that freedom to put your own stuff in it. So the starfish one, that one, they were straight up like, we need a man-eating starfish on land. And I was like, hell yeah. So that one, you know, just a lot of starfish research. For Season of Ghosts, that one was interesting because Shen Men, the nation that the adventure takes place in, it's not based or like it's not directly inspired by any specific real life country. Okay. Like it has little bits of inspiration from places, but it's mostly like its main inspiration is horror, like Asian horror, like tropes and themes, things like that. So
so cool.
Yeah. And so we were specifically in the outline, it was just specifically mentioned, like, you know, we're not planning to directly pull from specific like real life folklore or myths, but like certainly you can take inspiration, but like, you know, we're not like, because there are some creatures in like, you know, D&D and Pathfinder stuff that are directly like plucked from those mythological inspirations, and like we weren't going for that. So it was interesting because so I looked up a lot of like Asian horror themes and stuff like that. I did look up a lot of monsters just to see, you know, what kind of themes. There's a lot of faceless ghosts in Asia. I don't like it. I don't know why so many Asian countries decided ghosts shouldn't have faces, but that's just a thing, I guess. And yeah. But yeah, like NDAs, like there is one thing where I'm like, I did specifically get inspired by this thing that I feel like is a running theme in Asian folklore in like multiple countries, but those creatures haven't been announced, so I can't talk about it.
Well, I guess we'll just need to have you on again to talk about more things.
Make someone run it for the podcast. I want to play.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you can run it. I don't
know. Oh, I don't know. I'm scared.
I mean, yeah, maybe we could get someone to run it.
I've written for Pathfinder much more than I've actually played Pathfinder.
That's so funny. That's... what a power move. Instead of playing, what if I just wrote material for other people to play with? Okay, so I do want to talk about Chosun society because that's a huge part of what we're going to be drawing from, right? Like for today's discussion, because that is your main area of expertise, which is in the Chosun dynasty, specifically, like, you know, for if we're talking about fantasy Asia, right? I mean, sorry, fantasy Korea. That's where kind of your knowledge base is from. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Like, you know, I know little bits about other eras because of like Korean dramas and like Wikipedia, but like, yeah, Joseon is the only dynasty like I've done actual research and like read things for. I read books for this, Agatha.
Yeah. And so like, why did you want to write it? Or, like, what were you hoping to write? Like, what kind of game did you want out of, like, Chosun Society specifically?
Okay, so we can go for, like, the short answer, or we could go into the deeply into Michelle's psychology answer. Which one do you want?
Give me the psychology.
Okay, great. So... when I was young, in like elementary school, I became a little weirdo who became obsessed with Korea because there were not a lot of East Asian kids in my school. Like we're pretty diverse, but like the other Asians were mostly Southeast Asian. And so like, I guess there just weren't a lot of like Korean kids and like Chinese kids, and like kids would always it was always at lunchtime for some reason, kids would always ask me if I was Chinese, And I would always be like, no, I'm Korean. And, you know, we're in elementary school, it's the 90s. They don't know what a Korea is. And so I became like obsessed with researching Korea so I could explain to these other children what it means. Like, where is Korea? What is a, what's the difference? Like, so I was like this little like freak. Like, I knew what the flags were and everything.
I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah.
So
but that,
ever since then, like, you're like, I hold this knowledge.
Yeah. So that
and
just
now
like
playing this game.
Yeah, that just permeated into my brain, and then I guess playing TTRPGs, like, you know, there comes a point where I think if you're a POC, there comes a point where kind of like, you know, I've been playing with a lot of white people, and a lot of my characters have been white so far. I mean, maybe you're smarter than me and made your character not immediately white like I did. But
no, that's so relatable.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
I definitely did that.
Yeah, that's my instinct. And then I'm like, I want Asians, but I feel a little awkward creating an Asian character in this like blatantly like fantasy Europe. I guess I'll make my own Asia. So I did try to do that. It was literally like a one-to-one like Joseon fantasy. Like, it was not good. Like, I had a Word document with like currency like going through.
Oh, so there's, oh, that's like, so
like that's, I was like picking the first out how iteration currency of worked.
Wow.
Like, it was not good. Like, this was not playable, okay? Like, trying to teach my players how to use this currency would have been madness. But that was what I was doing. And then, you know, fast forward eventually, I'm playing Good Society obsessively. I love it. I love being a rebellious young lady who hates the patriarchy, et cetera, trying to get married to someone. And then I kept thinking, like, you know, you could do this in a Korean drama. I love historical Korean dramas. And so much of the stuff in, like, culturally with Regency era, it's like, you know, obviously it's not one-to-one. Very different, like Joseon, much stricter gender roles and, like, separation of the sexes. But, like, the focus on marriage, on money, on like using marriage to like climb socially, like there's a lot of similarities, and I was just like, I could use this, I could do that, why not? And so I did, and why not, I say, as I continue to work on art and layout.
Oh, every indie designer is a struggle. At least that's my big struggle. I don't have an eye for design or just artistic. Like, I just can't do it. So everything, I'm like, this is really ugly, but I don't know how to fix it. So I feel you. But just on society is so good, though. And it's like, and this kind of like the perfect way for us to like start thinking about, what if fantasy Asia, but specifically inspired by Korea? Like, so let's see. I kind of like, this series is kind of about like what people could include if they want to like set their fantasy setting in, or no, if they want to create a fantasy world that is inspired by like various parts of Asia, and specifically Korea. So, like, I guess, like, how would you go about it in terms of, like, what kind of things to include? Like, details or things like that. What do you think?
I think social structure is, like, one of the first things you gotta look at.
Right.
I mean, just in world building in general, even if you're not basing on a real culture, like, social structure, social hierarchy, the way things move, like everyone's life depends on that. And like, and then if you are basing on a real culture, like it's going to be different from time to time. Things change, things move. So like, you know, Shilla things were much different than Koryo. Koryo things were different from Joseon. Like, Koryo was a lot more, like, gender dynamics-wise, it was much more equal compared to Joseon. Like, women could get divorced. Like, people just having premarital sex was not a big deal, apparently.
So this is, like, the different dynasties.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, while, like, in Shilla, like, royals, they had a thing called the bone rank system. So royals were the, I think it was the sacred bone. And then, like, depending on, like, your noble line, you'd have, like, a different type of bone you were. And, like, sacred bones, I think, could only marry sacred bones. So, you know, very incestuous for obvious reasons. But then, like, you know, that system didn't work out for kind of obvious reasons. Like, eventually you run out of other royals in your bloodline to marry. So, right. Yeah. But, yeah, interesting stuff. For me, my favorite cultural little thing, we've talked about this, I've ranted and raved about this, is marriage customs. I freaking love marriage customs. Yeah, like, how you ask someone to marry you is such a huge thing. And, like, not just that, but, like, the process of getting married. Because, like, you know, and sometimes the moment you're engaged, you're basically considered a married couple, while others, it's like, no, it's not until you spend the night together, then you're, like, actually a couple. Like, you know, it's a huge process. But, like, for me, like, marriage customs, I feel like it just defines everything.
But, yeah, so, like, what kind of marriage customs are we talking about?
Yeah, so in Joseon had, like, a huge, very extensive process that I believe was the marriage rites were based on Confucian rites. So it was pretty similar to what was going on in China at the time, at least like when it was the Ming Dynasty.
Right.
So that was, like, you know, it was a huge process, and, like, they would, like, get their the fortunes of the couple to make sure that they matched up and it would be an auspicious marriage, and they would, like, pick out what is, like, a good day for them to get married, and, like, you know, the moms of the houses are sending spies to the other families to, like, check on them, make sure it's a good match, stuff like that. But, like, for me, like, it's so when you become of age, which was younger for girls and older for boys, because patriarchy, blah blah blah, you know, your hair would go up. When you're a kid, everyone had their hair in, like, little braids, but then, like, once you became of age, your hair would go up in a bun and you were officially an adult. But then at some point, the bun for girls, it became associated with being married. So if you had a hairpin and a bun up, that basically meant you were a married woman. So at some point, it's kind of nebulous when, like, even unmarried, like, young women who were considered adults, they would have the braid because they were unmarried. So, like, you'll see this in Korean dramas, like, a man will, like, give a woman a hairpin. That's him saying, yo, I want to marry you. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I love that. Yeah, it's, I love that the symbol came from, like, or the item as a symbol came from that kind of, like, tradition. That makes so much sense. Yeah. I want you to put your hair up. Gasp. But, like, okay, so, like, that's super interesting in terms of, like, world building in items. So I was just thinking about, like, I think that's a very interesting thing to, like, have a list of, like, symbolic items. Like, if you're doing again, like, you're setting your fantasy world, not setting it, you're inspired by Korea, or, like, let's say Joseon Dynasty specifically, then you can have, like, a list of items that have specific symbolic meanings for, like, player characters to choose from, and then each one will, like, have very specific meanings. Like, for example, if there's a hairpin, that one a character has. Like, it could be a hairpin that they were never able to give out, or it could be a hairpin that they received, but then you can look at their hair is like, oh, but their hair is still down. Like, what's up with that? Like, that, all of this can, like, immediately build so much backstory just based on, like, these details, right? But you were also, I remember when we were chatting off the recording, you were also talking about rings. So rings is also a thing, right?
Yes. So single woman wore one ring, and that was just a fashion item. Married woman, you would give them two rings. So one is worn by the woman, one is worn by her husband. And then when her husband dies, she would wear his ring. So a widow would have two rings, and that symbolized her loyalty to him.
Okay.
So, but, yeah, like, so giving a woman a pair of rings is also, yo, I want to marry you.
But so why would, like, if I was a man and I was giving someone a pair, now I'm like, oh, I need to know. Like, why would I give them two rings instead of just one and keeping one for myself?
It's because, like, they did wear a single ring. So, like, if you just give one, like, it's kind of just a present is what I'm thinking is probably it. Like, you give the two to show, like, this me and you. This me and you.
And I guess you don't start wearing it until you're actually, like, you've been through all of the ceremony and stuff.
I believe so. I'm not 100% on that. Like, let me look at my document. Let me see if I have it in here. My freakishly
what
long.
What does it mean?
Gosh, it's, how many pages is this thing? Oh my god.
So you're looking up your, is this your Chosun Society, like, reference doc?
Yeah. It's so long. Okay, it does not say, but if I remember correctly, once a couple got to a certain stage of their engagement, they were basically considered married. So there's actually there's actually a Korean drama that came out recently. Oh gosh, what was it called? It's called, like, Flower Scholar, like, it's about, like, this girl who runs a boarding, the Secret Romantic Guest House. So this girl, like, runs a boarding house, and there's all these, you know, handsome men and blah, blah, blah stuff happening. But there's a lot of political stuff happening in the background. And there's this one plot point where, spoilers for this show, I'm trying to keep it vague so you don't know who I'm talking about. But there is a character who she was engaged to a man who died. And he died before they got married, but his dad is who is currently alive, is a bad guy. And he was like, she should die and join him since she's basically his wife. And so they have to, like, hide this woman from him because he's like, we should kill her so she can prove her fidelity. Like,
right.
Yeah. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
It's an okay drama if you want to watch it. It's okay.
a lukewarm recommendation.
It's fun. The side characters are kind of better. That, like, honestly, the secondary OTP is much better than the primary couple.
But I feel like that often happens for me when I watch drama. It's just that,
yeah.
I don't know why. I guess I don't know. They're not, like, beholden to plot, I guess, like the main plot. Or, like, you're just, like, so emotionally invested in the main, like, pairing that, like, if it's not perfect, then it's kind of, like, it's kind of unsatisfying. I don't know. But, like, so, like, what other kind of items? Like, I guess, I mean, if this is, like, a fighty game, then, like, probably weapons, like, cool weapons that we can draw from.
Yeah, it's interesting because again, I'm going to bring up Korean dramas a lot, but, like, in dramas, you know, you'll see, like, people with swords and stuff like that a lot. But from my research, I couldn't find exact dates and things, but, like, it looks like swords were illegal at certain points in history. Like, you know, you couldn't just carry them around unless you were a high-ranking military officer. And swords were not a popular weapon because steel in Korea at the time was not very good quality, like, to the point where when they fought with Japanese invaders during the Imjin War, like, they would take Japanese swords because they were much better quality than theirs. And they, like, even if they're broken, they would use them as, like, basically as a short sword or a knife. And so, like, people couldn't really be carrying around, like, real weapons. Like, soldiers had, had, like, pole arms mostly and bow and arrow. Like, Korea is still, like, king at archery in the Olympics. Right. And, like, that's where that history is from because, you know, it's a mountainous area. Like, you can't really go around fighting people with swords. It's not strategic. So there's a lot of, like, cavalry and stuff like that. And, but there's a lot of, like, interesting history about things that became improvised weapons. So, fans were a huge fashion item, but apparently I could not find a lot of, like, sources to really confirm this is true or not, but it's too cool, so I included it anyway. But they're apparently fighting fans that are made of, like, petrified wood, so you could just, like, smack people. And, like, these fans, people would build, like, knives into them or put, like, pouches to, like, hide poison powder and, like, blow it out at people. And then there was also, once men became of age, you had to have an identity tag. So it was basically a, it was like a wooden, well, not always wooden, but it was like this long, like, kind of a stick kind of thing, and it would say your name and your hometown, basically. Or right. Maybe it was your Pokemon, maybe it was your family line. But, and, like, the material would be different based on your social status. So, like, certain types of wood or, like, ivory. And, like, the only people who did not have it were basically, like, royals. Were the only men who did not have this. But there came to be a martial art based on beating people up using these identity tags. And, like, it's a full-on martial art. I think it's called Hupe. Let me Google it real quick.
That's so amazing. It's like, can I check your ID, please? Yes. Ugh, check that. No. But, yeah.
Okay, Google is not being helpful. I think it's either Hupe or Hope. It might be Hope.
Okay. But yeah, that is really interesting. It's like basically like modern day, like your social security number, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Except, and it's like in a physical form, which makes sense because like there's no database to draw from. Mm-hmm. So, or online database.
And this was important because this was also how you were identified for military conscription. So a lot of times people would forge them with like false information so they wouldn't get conscripted into the military.
Oh, so is it, it would be like only people of a certain like class, I guess?
Because only commoners could be conscripted basically. If you were, slaves were not conscripted, they were exempt from military service and taxes. And then nobles, like the middle nobles and the high up nobles, were also exempt. So if you were a farmer, you were just screwed. Life was bad for you.
Right. So this is also like, it could be a very interesting thing as like an item that a character could have, like all the different identification tags. It can be like, is this like in that list of items, one could be like identification tag, and then another one could be identification tag false.
And like, also the material fun. Like the material like instantly differentiates what social status you are.
And it's kind of like in a, and like guess clothing would as well. Like a lot of like societies with strong social stratification, like materials and stuff, like that's also very interesting to have like in your world building, like the kind of clothing that you can wear or cannot wear. And then if you're making like a fantasy kind of homebrew setting, or just setting material in general, then you can denote like what kind of material has magic or does not have magic, and then like, ooh, and then tie that into like class and like who is allowed to use what kind of magic, just based on this thing that you're drawing from, like the real life laws and norms. So that's, I guess you mentioned very briefly slaves, and I guess this is a thing that maybe we should like talk about as well. Like social stratification was a huge part of Joseon society, and that also included like slaves. So like if someone were to create a setting that's a fantasy Korea, like do you feel like this aspect of say like Joseon society should be included?
I don't think it has to be. Like, I think you can acknowledge, you know, parts, like, acknowledge that these things happened and may consciously decide not to enjoy that in something that's supposed to be a fun recreational activity. But it's something I really struggled with for Joseon society. Like, I was really torn about whether to even include slavery or not, because like slavery did not end in Joseon basically until the dynasty ended. Like, and it was really because of like outside pressure and, you know, because of social norms kind of slowly changing, it was becoming a bit more unpopular. But like, slavery was just around for so long and it was so integrated, and it wasn't exactly chattel slavery the way we might think about it in the West. You know, it wasn't it wasn't the type of slavery that you saw in like the Americas and in Europe, but you know, people were still property. They could be sold, like they didn't have agency, and it's not a, you know, it's an unpleasant topic. It's not something we really like to think about. And like, I think some people, that is an aspect that they'll be interested in exploring and maybe fighting against. Like, you know, there were a lot of like, basically like scholars and people who had like strong abolitionist policies. There were like social like philosophies that were against slavery, especially when Christianity came into Joseon. Like Christianity, one of the big reasons people freaked out and were like trying to wipe them out and like get rid of them fast as possible, was because there was this concept that all people are equal, and that did not jive with the social class of, you know, the king is at top, and then like it kind of trickles down, like we all have our place. And so like Christianity actually became really popular with the lower classes for obvious reasons with that. And but yeah, I don't think you have to incorporate slavery or keep it. But I think if you're like really trying to draw from history, like, I mean, it existed, it was there. It's something you gotta at least think about. And like, if you're publishing something, like, I think you should definitely have a cultural consultant and like discuss with them. Cause I mean, I think you could definitely make a something kind of like, you know, your fantasy, like AU version of Joseon that does not have slavery. Like, Joseon without slavery, like a fantasy version, I can imagine that happening. But I don't know. I guess like it depends on how much like you want historicity. Am I making sense? Am I just rambling?
Yeah. I think I completely agree with you in that like having an acknowledgement is, oh, I'm so sorry. My cat just, I'm so sorry, but it actually just, my cat just, pressed the full screen button, and everything on camera just became a little funky for a sec. But anyway, it's fine. It's disappeared now. Had all our notes on it. I don't know if it actually fully appeared. Anyway, I think, yeah, having an acknowledgement is kind of it should be done. And I also kind of feel like when it's kind of more delving into the darker side or like, yeah, the more problematic parts of a culture's history, I feel like it's, my opinion is that it's still better if it is an own voices kind of creation that does that versus like someone else, like from a different culture.
Yeah, for sure. I would be very uncomfortable if like, ugh.
Yeah. So, and I think that's important to distinguish, is that I don't think everyone should do it. But if it's like, if you are like, this is my culture and I want to like really discuss like the things that are not, that have, that are not good, you know, that are morally questionable, then yes, go for it and get hire a cultural consultant or a sensitivity reader as well, like you did for Just One Society.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, but if it's someone else, then maybe don't. Unless you're also like impacted by it, right? Like your history, it has been like negatively impacted by this specific thing. Then that also makes sense. I think own voices, that is like, yes, go for it. But then otherwise, I would say no. But I think it is still a good idea to like acknowledge that it's in there, just in your text somewhere, if this is something that you want to publish. It also might be interesting to bring up to the table. If this is just like, you know, like a homebrew thing, because like sometimes not talking about it is erasure, and that also is not always, not always great. I mean, I know like, you know, this is a hobby and we're here to have fun, and like, you don't need to be like, I'm not saying everyone needs to be holding themselves to like the highest standards, of like, you know, morality or whatever, but it like, if this is something that you're interested in, then I think though these aspects are also important to keep in mind.
Yeah, because like we are, you know, ultimately when you're world building, you are kind of cherry picking things that interest you and that you want to like be inspired by, but like you don't want to make it feel like you're glorifying a culture and like kind of skipping over. I mean, every culture, every nation, no matter what, They have their skeletons, like it's gonna be there. But like, you know, we can't just pretend they aren't there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think acknowledgement is important. And but like, let's I guess speaking of like the fun.
Speaking of having fun.
Speaking of fun. let's go back into like the fun and like representative aspects to include, like if we were to do like top hits of like what you think that people should include in their homebrew setting or their fantasy Korean setting, like what kind of things. Okay, we know marriage customs is high on the list. We know
I want to see those hairpins.
The hairpins, the rings, and all that, and identity tags. Yes. Which
I love identity tags. I use them in my homebrew D&D game. Like, and nice. So the players, they became basically kind of like secret FBI agents, I guess you could say. So they had like government authority to like help investigate certain things. But then, like, you know, who do you trust with this info? So they had two different IDs that they could, like, pop out. So that was very fun.
I feel like it's so relatable. Like, that's one of the things that is very relatable in, like, modern day. Because we're always talking about identity theft and things like
that. Yeah, identity theft was a thing, for sure. Like, there's, so, like, nobles, they kept these books called Pongwan. that are basically like a log of like your lineage of like everyone. And like knowing your Pomon was super important because this is like, you know, this is your identity. This is your legacy, et cetera, et cetera. Like, but like false ones were so rampant by like, I want to say like 17th century, something like that. I have the actual thing in my document, but I'm not going to look at it now because I don't like looking off screen so much. But like, yeah, like it was a huge thing. Like people would buy ones where like the lineage had died out or like it was disgraced and they would just write their name in. I'm like, oh, look, I'm also an aristocrat. I'm a noble. Stop texting me.
Yeah, it makes sense because there's so much incentive to do that. I mean, of course, I'm sure there are also like really harsh punishments, but like, but humans we tend to gamble and think that, what if I'm the exception? And like, yeah, like the taxation and like being able to even like get a government position, all that, and just like the whole like quality of life is so, yeah. It makes such drastic jumps based on.
Yeah, it's just such a huge difference. And like life as a commoner was brutal. Like you're the only one paying taxes and like your taxes are coming out of your produce. So like there are stories about farmers straight up just destroying all their crops so they wouldn't have to deal with the taxes because the tax burden was so heavy. Like they were just having such a bad time. Like people were starving until farming techniques improved. And like also I think in like 16th or 15th century, like potatoes, sweet potatoes, like more drought resistant crops were introduced. And so they were, you know, now they could actually have more stuff to eat during the winter. Like before then, people were eating like tree bark to survive. It was bad. It was
bad. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like this transition is a little callous, but like these are also very interesting, like adventure hooks. You know, people dying of starvation. But, like, it's kind of true, right? Like this is the kind of thing that you can also draw inspiration from. Like,
you know what I think is a great adventure hook? So yeah, in, I can't remember where it, I think it was, on like one of the holidays, people would, commoners, they would try to steal dirt from like a nobleman's house, like a rich man's house. Cause it was like, if you had it, like it was supposed to like improve your own fortunes. I think that would be such a fun heist. Like, you're just literally just trying to steal dirt from their house, like, break it, and, like, while all these celebrations are going on.
Right. Yeah, it could also be, like, I feel like this is a very classic one. It's, like, you were asked by, like a noble person to go in and investigate why, like, this specific area, like, all the crops seem to just keep failing and there's like, and they're not paying their taxes. And then you go there and then you find out what's happening. And then,
Cause like geomancy is a huge thing at the time.
Yes. Let's talk about geomancy because I think this is like the coolest thing to talk about. If you want to talk about like magic in a non-Western kind of setting and specifically drawing from like in this case, Korea, but like, and like East Asia-esque. So geomancy.
Yeah, geomancy, the main version of it in Joseon was was Pungsu, which is the Korean version of I can never say it right, Agatha.
I can say it.
Yes.
Pungshui.
Yes, Pungshui. I can never say it right for some reason. But it's basically the Korean version. And it was crucial to, like, honestly, everything, like the energy, the flow of energy in the land, like dictated where villages were built, where graves were placed. And like fortune telling in general, divination was just a science at the time. And it was huge. Like, you know, it was it was a vital component of deciding if a marriage was compatible or not, what day to get married. Like, it was so geomancy. Geomancy comes up in Korean dramas and movies. I was telling you about that. There's a really good Korean drama called Possam, B-O-S-S-A-M, Steal the Fate, where this person is supposedly dead. They are not dead. The bad guys are trying to kill them off for real to make their ruse complete. But they have pretended this person died. And the king knows. The king knows what's up and is like, hey, I've been having all these like terrible nightmares. I think we should move their grave. I think their grave is in a bad place and we need to move it so they can be put to rest. And the bad guys are like, wait, are you accusing us of putting their grave in like a bad spot? And like, it's just this, they have this argument because if that grave gets dug up, they screwed. So it's just so interesting. And yeah, like people fighting over like spots with good energy. Like there's just so much juice.
Yeah, and like there I've read so many kind of like horror stories or like stories with horror in them that have to do with like when bodies are like buried in the wrong place or it's like there's like a combination where like it does seem like this is like a good place where with like good energies, but then like people like shifted certain like stones or different aspects and then it suddenly became like the worst, and then you create zombies.
So yeah, they're like rituals that villages would do where like if an area had like bad energy, there were like rituals to basically supplement that energy and like cancel it out. Like it's really interesting stuff. But there's also, I just remembered, there's this old urban legend apparently about like during Japanese colonialism, or I think it was during colonialism. But like there's basically this urban legend that these Japanese like military soldiers strategically drove these iron spikes into mountains to disrupt the feng shui of the land and like bring like, you know, bad juju basically.
Yeah. So yeah, geomancy is definitely important.
It also, I realized I didn't bring it up when we were talking off recording, but Korea also has a lot of indigenous folklore, and like shamanism is a big thing. It's like it's a very old tradition. It's called Muism, and shamans are called Mudang. This, like, if you wanted to include this, you definitely need a cultural consultant for sure, because it is something that people still practice, and it's. Yeah, but like it's really fascinating, and there like shamanism does come up in a lot of great Korean dramas, like Revenant right now. It's so good. And there's also The Guest. They're both on Netflix. They both have extremely hot people as the main characters, and they're like but like shamanism and like evil spirits feature heavily in these two dramas. Like if you can stand being scared for your life at night, like watch these shows. They're both so good. But there's also The Cursed. This one I personally think is not as good as the other two. It's a little slow, but I think it gets a little deeper into like actual shamanism and like talking about evil spirits, and like it's really interesting stuff, and it's also really scary. It's really scary, guys. But yeah, shamanism. Sorry, I'm only talking about like shamanism in a scary context because they use it a lot in these horror movies. I promise, like it's really interesting stuff if you look it up. They like shamans were looked down on pretty harshly during Joseon because like if it wasn't Confucianism, it was like no thank you. But you know, you can't just like magically tell people to forget all their old beliefs and stuff. So like people still heavily believed in spirits and things like that, and like shamans were still hired for like rituals and rites and like to appease spirits and like speak to spirits and things like that. So yeah, shamanism, very important part of folklore and just like culture, really, because like a lot of holiday customs were all like rooted in shamanism.
Right. Oh, that's super cool. And I guess we would probably also need to include aspects of Confucianism, since that basically informed all, or like huge parts of like the social structure and customs and like power, the way that power is distributed.
Yeah, like some things, you know, my beloved hairpin that comes from like a fashion thing. So that you know, that isn't tied directly to like a certain social structure. It's like this was the fashion at the time and it became the symbol. But then like there are certain other things that are much more strongly tied into Confucianism. So you know, your game might not have Confucianism. Confucius was not born in your game, in your fantasy game, but you know, that kind of hierarchy, some of those values like filial piety, things like that, like those might be important, or like, you know, king kind of being number one, like they're an example for you to look up to. And if they're not being a good example, like, well, the heavens might come after them. Like, that might be a thing. Like, for example, there were these silver knives called 장도, 은장도, and they were mostly a fashion item. They were very expensive, and they were, like, inlaid with, like, gemstones. They had very intricate designs. Like, there's this one particular area, this one province that was, like, especially known for making, like, really intricate ones. And they were, like, a huge, huge for commerce with China at the time. But, and so, like, for a long time, it was just a fashion accessory. And there was, you could, like, build stuff into it. Like, people would have ones that had, like, foldable chopsticks that came out and, like, you know, little accessories that were built in. Like, ladies had ones with, like, little sewing kits in them and stuff. But then after the Imjin War and, like, all these invasions happened, unfortunately, as happens in life, a lot of women were taken captive. And in Confucianism, like, a wife had to be fully devoted to her husband, like only her husband, like, and, you know, if she had relations with someone else, regardless of whether it was her choice or not, like, she was basically dishonored. It was, like, bad. And so, you know, there was this, like, kind of crisis because, you know, like, they couldn't know for sure if, like, these women came back pure. So the knife, it became a symbol of chastity for women, and it would get passed down from woman to daughter. And it was basically a weapon to protect yourself from, to protect yourself and your chastity so you could save yourself for your husband. Sorry, that got dark.
That's super depressing. But like, also, also a part of life, probably not an aspect that most people would want to include.
Yeah, I would not recommend you include that in your game. Like, you're going to make people really sad.
Yeah, but like so many other aspects of Confucianism too, like the whole filial piety thing, it has also to do with like your body, right? And this is why like you're not allowed to cut your hair, because you're like, everything is a gift from your parents, and so, and you're not supposed to harm any aspect of it.
Actually, like, earrings were really popular in previous dynasties. Like, if you see paintings and stuff, you see like a lot of big earrings. Like, even men wore them, it was the fashion. But then when it gets to Joseon, earrings basically disappear, and like women only wore them for special occasions,
right? Yeah, and then I remember we were talking
about Kingdom.
Yeah, you were talking about Kingdom.
Yeah, because I love watching reactor videos, and like these people would be watching Kingdom, and like the reactors were pretty much all Western, so I can watch in English, you know, and they're all like they all get so frustrated when people refuse to burn the bodies or don't want to destroy the bodies. They're like, no, they're zombies. They're monsters. You got to get rid of the bodies. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, it's they don't realize like it's because they don't realize there's that cultural context of we cannot destroy these bodies. That'd be such a sin against like these people and their parents. Like, it's just such a no-no. Like, so yeah, it's like just really this really interesting abhorrent. Disconnect. Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, so like there's this Korean drama back in the day. It was not good, but it was funny. It was called Rooftop Prince. This prince
Rooftop
and
Prince.
Yeah. Have you watched it?
I did.
Yeah. For those who have not watched it, there's this prince and his like three bodyguards. They get time like jumped to the present. And, you know, they're just walking around with their beautiful, luxurious hair. But they realize at a point, like, you know, men in this time, they don't wear their hair like this. We gotta cut our hair. And, like, they're sitting in the barber chair and they're all, like, crying hysterically. And this is a comedy, so we're allowed to laugh at them. But, like, one of them, he, like, gets out of the chair. He's like, no, I'd rather die. Just, like, kill me now. And they're all, like, crying. And it's so freaking funny. But, like, that's what it was like. Like, cutting your hair was a sin. It was just so wrong because you were dishonoring the precious body that your parents gave you.
Yeah. So,
they're just bawling.
Oh, and I think one more thing that we probably wanted to mention that is great to include are turtle ships, right?
Yes! Turtle ships! Turtle ships! If you do not know what a turtle ship is, please Google it immediately. This was during the Imjin War. Look up General Yi Sun-shin, one of the greatest naval commanders on Earth. They invented a ship that, okay, you have a boat, it has armored plating on top to cover it up so the arrows can't get through. It has a dragon head mast that shoots fire out of it. And they didn't lose a single one of these dang ships. They had like five of them against like a bajillion Japanese like Navy ships. They didn't lose a single one. Yi Sun-shin never, ever, ever lost a battle. Truly like the underdog story of ever is completely insane. It's so incredible. But yeah, these ships are amazing. And who doesn't want an armored boat that breathes fire?
Yeah, that's super cool. I love that so much. That should be in everything. Turtle ship.
It should.
So cool.
It really should. Like, why are you not? Why are we not all building turtle ships? Who needs a regular ship? Like, come on.
So let's do patron questions. We had two questions, specifically for this topic. So one of them is from Kat, who is one of our patrons and also one of our lovely mods. Thank you so much, Kat. And the question is, what are some unique forces or conditions that would distinguish urban versus rural locations in a homebrew fantasy Korea?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. I think, so again, most of my knowledge is based on Joseon because that's the only part of Korean history that I actually spent time and read books about. But so the capital, like basically the more important you were, the closer you lived to the center, and then it kind of spread out, and then there are all these like countryside, you know, villages and cities where there are like smaller government positions. So I think one of the big things that would separate like a more urban and rural location is like who's top dog. Like, what's the highest government position you have there? And, like, how powerful are they actually? Are other people, like, checking in on you? Or is this person, like, totally uncontested? Like, how are they actually getting their power? Is it kind of like, oh, yeah, they just pass it down to their, like, the son is obviously going to get it next? Or is it like, no, they are legit, some random guy might pass the civil exam and take this spot somehow.
Right.
And then also, like, the more, you know, if you're basing it, depending on how, like, historical you're getting, but I think even if you're not specifically basing this on, like, Korean history, like, the more urban you get, the more you're going to get certain beliefs, like, the government-led beliefs, I think. And then the more rural you are, you're going to have more of those traditions and things like that, like villages. Like villages all had their own like rituals and things like that. Like there are certain villages that would have their own specific festivals. They would have their own specific ways of like dealing with spirits. They had their own variations of shamanistic rituals. Like shamanism was very different depending on the regions you were in. Like almost everywhere, shamans were mostly women, except I believe it might have been Jeju, where shamans were mostly men. They believed that a female shaman would be like bad luck. So like, you know, even those things, like, so you might have, so like this area might have certain traditions that are not common to other places. They believe more deeply in like certain types of spirits. They might have like certain older religious artifacts and things that maybe the government doesn't like, because the government's like, hey, this is our current ideology and you should do this. And the village is just like, shh, here's our secret shrine. Don't tell anyone.
I love that. And okay, so the second question is from Daniel, co-host Daniel, which is a very Daniel question. If you could pick one creature from Korean mythology, what would it be?
I think this question should be classified as torture for making me choose one creature. Like, why? My cat just opened the door. Hello, Macy. Gosh, what creature? Macy, say hi. If you're a patron, hi, this is Macy. If you are just on the podcast, Macy is a chubby little tortie. She's black and gold. She has a little RBF face. Yeah, and she's very annoying. Let me see. One creature. You know, I feel like I could be super basic and go with the Kumio, which is the Korean version of the nine-tailed fox. That's a popular one. Like, it's a really interesting story. Shapeshifter eats livers. Very scary, very cool. I think it would make for a great, like, Call of Cthulhu or Deltagreen monster.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think Imugi are really interesting. I-M-U-G-I. They're like proto-dragons. They're basically big serpents, but there's like different myths of like how they can do certain things to become a full-fledged dragon. And then Imugi was actually the main bad guy in this Korean drama, Tale of the Nine-Tailed, I think it's called. But like, basically he's like, and that one had a lot of like interesting little mythology things. It's okay. It's fun. Sorry, I'm very judgy about these dramas.
No, it's fine. You can say whatever you want. And we will, we'll have the list of the dramas that were mentioned in show notes.
I added some stuff. Yeah.
I put some of them in. We can take a look at it. Speaking of Patreon, this is the time for us to shout out our amazing patrons. This really would not be possible without all of you, with all of your support. Like, we really do appreciate it. Let me switch to whabam. All right. So again, shout out to our amazing patrons. All of you, amazing. We love you. And also, especially our most honorable sponsors, Metal Weave Games, Valor's Games, Stefan, the most honorable times two, Epic Impulse, Bob C, and Brooke Bright. And then also Michelle. Are you one of the
I am a patron. I'm not one of the most honorable. I'm in the lower. I'm the other Michelle.
If we were to look at the identification tags, yours would not be Irie. Is that what we're saying? Yeah. No.
I'm the non-honorable Michelle.
Oh, God. No, we're not we are not judging our patrons like this. Everyone is equal. We love all of you. Some of you are just the most honorable, and some of you are simply honorable.
Some of you are just rich.
But we appreciate all of you. And another thing is, speaking of like community stuff, Big Bad Con is coming up. When is it happening again? It's in September, September. And I think many of our team is going to be there. Big Bad Con is a convention that happens in San Francisco. If you want to meet us in person, you should really do that.
You can come yell at me for Chosun Society not being out yet.
Oh yeah, I know. I love how this whole episode is just like a huge tease to a game that is not
all the
out.
Pressure.
but if you're like, hey, I wanna play test this game, aka my way to get my hands on some game text before it's officially released, people can reach you, right?
Yes, you can reach me. I'm on most things as Miss MYK on Twitter. There's underscores next to them because someone else took it and they haven't been on Twitter since 2018, and I'm at war with them. I mean, Twitter is about to implode, I guess, which is a bummer for me because that's how I communicate with a lot of people. But I don't know. I'm on the Asians Represent Discord server. You can hit me up.
Yeah. And also on dice.camp.
I'm on Mastodon at dice camp. I have an itch.io.
Also,
you want my weird little games
with Miss MYK. Which is just up below Michelle's face on this video, so you should be able to see that. I think we're probably going to talk about more stuff. I want to play more Chosun Society at some point. So
the only known playtest. There are other people who have the doc. I don't know if they've done anything with them, but Agatha has played the one known playtest, and it was a good time.
It was very fun. Michelle's character was wild.
Look, I had to make sure my honey was number one in the civil exam, okay? And then he wasn't, but it's fine. Wait, my character's wild? You kidnapped him.
So anyway, everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Asians Represent for Fantasy Asia Korea episode. I think next time we might be going on a break soon for this season, but stay tuned for whatever comes up next. We'll see you then.